Chapter 12. It's late Thursday night, and Derek is comfortably slouched in an armchair with a book thicker than his arm when his phone jingles. It's Stiles, mangling the English language as usual. "What are you doing, Sat?" "Considering joining a book group, or maybe taking yoga lessons so I don't have to watch Tyler and Sylvia every Saturday night for Laura and Jonathan's date night. I'm leaning towards the book group. Why?"
"That means you're not busy, right?"
"Yes, that means I'm not busy."
"Some friends and me are doing a thing for my birthday. 2 p.m. D&B. You want in?"
Derek almost drops his phone. He's pretty sure that it's embarrassing how pleased he is to actually be invited to something, instead of just having an event that Stiles merely agreed to. He almost agrees blindly before it occurs to him that he has no idea what D&B means. Cora is in a movie, so he can't ask her. The lawyer's son in him won't let him agree until he understands what he's agreeing to. So he asks, "What does D&B mean?" Honestly, he always asks Cora for translations because of that first time he had spoken to Stiles after everything that had gone south, and Stiles had found it so funny that he hadn't understood what digits meant. The mild embarrassment hadn't been the end of the world, but he wasn't eager for multiple repeat performances either. He's pretty sure that he would look and feel stupider each time. To his relief, the reply is immediate and illuminating. "Sorry, Dave and Buster's. It's an arcade restaurant type of thing. We go there every year. It's like a thing." Derek can't even remember the last time he had been in an arcade. He can't keep back the grin as he texts back, "Sounds like fun."
"Ask Cora. She can come too," Stiles says a few minutes later.
"Will do. She's out now, though. I'll let you know." That tips his scale into stupidly happy, because it means Stiles likes other members of his family, even after he'd had some time away from them. It also meant, most likely, that he hadn't noticed Cora snooping around his school. "'Kay," is Stiles' reply, and then, "see you then." Since he doesn't seem to be in the mood to chat, Derek goes back to his book. When Cora gets home later, he extends the offer, and she bounces on her heels and says that of course she'll go.
"What are you going to get him for his birthday?" she asks.
Derek freezes. "I have no idea."
"Okay, I'll ask him what he wants then," Cora says, winking at her.
"You're amazing," he says, and gives her a hug. Not only does Cora tell him exactly what to buy Stiles for his birthday, she and Laura also team up to tell him what to wear. They argue like cats and dogs over this, because Laura is in favor of the V-neck, and Cora protests that that's obvious, and Laura returns that Stiles had clearly liked the V-neck Derek had been wearing in the rain, and they bicker about this while Derek wishes he could melt into the walls. Cora finally wins the argument by telling Laura about the "slow your roll" comment, and they put him in a dark green Henley and faded blue jeans. Cora, for whom dressing up is not in vocabulary, is wearing jeans and a tank top, even though it's a little chilly out. She also recommends that they be about 5 or 10 minutes late, so they're not the first ones there, and Derek agrees. When they get inside, he realizes that it's not the best venue for werewolves. It's crowded and extremely noisy, but he sucks it up. He sees Stiles sitting on a bench with Scott just inside, and a brunette girl he doesn't know. At a table not far away, Sheriff Stilinski is sitting with a dark-haired woman with an obvious resemblance to Scott. Stiles glances up as they approach.
Oh, hey, he says to Derek, feeling and looking awkward.
"Hey." Derek starts to move closer to him, giving in to the initial impulse to form a pack to deal with the noise and the crowd, but he manages to stop himself before he crosses human boundaries, because he's not sure that Stiles would be okay with that. That tiny smile that's reserved for seeing Stiles makes a momentary appearance. "Happy birthday."
"My birthday's actually not until Monday," Stiles says. But, yeah. "Hi, Cora," he adds, and she grins and waves at him.
Oh, Derek, you've met Scott, but Scott, Cora, Scott, and this is Scott's girlfriend, Allison."
Greetings are exchanged. Allison seems nice, and she has an arm around Scott's waist.
Oh, Stiles says, "I guess I should introduce you to my dad, huh?"
You were all about wanting to meet my family, and I guess we never really got into that. Derek nods, smart enough to play along like he had never met the sheriff before, and tries to hide how pleased he is to be invited to officially meet Styles' family. Better late than never. So he follows Styles over to the table. Tom is smart enough to pretend he hasn't met Derek. He shakes his hand and gives him the side eye, and they exchange pleasantries. Derek is also introduced to Melissa McCall, who delivers the side eye with a little more subtlety than the sheriff. Our job is to guard the presence while the party's going on, Melissa says. Who else is coming? Cora asks. Just my friend Heather, Styles says, glancing at his watch. She said she would be a little late, so she should be here soon. Cora looks a little surprised, presumably to realize that Styles only has three friends, but she's smart enough not to say anything. Derek isn't surprised that Styles has a small social group, not after his talks with the sheriff. To be frank, someone who is a blooming social butterfly likely wouldn't have instinctually drawn Derek to him the way that Styles had. At the mention of guarding the presence, Derek passes over the one he had brought Styles to be added to the pile. Styles narrows his eyes at Derek and says, "Come to think of it, you two will have unfair advantages at, like, every game in this place." Derek gives a half shrug. "We aren't allowed to play a lot of the games that let you win prizes. Sometimes we can play against each other, or sometimes the noise actually makes us worse at a game." "Well, even so," Styles says, "I reserve the right to take up to half your tickets if I need them." Derek arches an eyebrow at him. "We'll call it birthday privilege." "Damn right we will," Styles says with smug satisfaction. Derek employs the eyebrows of judgment. "How's the cat?" "Ugh, shedding on everything and thinking she owns the place," Styles says with a dramatic roll of his eyes. Allison giggles. "My dad's such a sucker for her, so I guess now I have to keep her." "Uh-huh," Derek says. "Decide on a name yet?" Yeah, Styles rubs one hand over his hair and gives him an unsure smile. "I named her Cleopatra, because, you know, Cleopatra was the queen of the Nile, and I'm the king of denial, so it seemed appropriate somehow." "That's adorable," Cora says. "No, it isn't. Shut up," Styles retorts. Hey, there's my girl." Styles waves as Heather approaches. She's dressed in a cute top and a short skirt and gives Styles a hug that lingers for a few moments. "Glad you could make it," Styles says, and then waves to the others. That's Derek and his sister Cora, and this is Heather. We've been friends since we were in diapers." Derek hadn't really thought of himself as the jealous sort prior to this exact moment in time. To be fair, he's never really had the opportunity. But there's a twinge now when that hug lingers, and when he hears the affectionate, possessive terms. He jams it down because Styles seems genuinely happy to have her there, and Derek doesn't want to ruin that. At the same time, he finds it impossible to work up any sort of smile, so he settles for a pleasantly neutral expression. Honestly, it's not like he smiles all the time anyway. Cora gives him a reassuring, "I've got this, bro," look, and then Styles says, "Okay, last one to the laser tag pays for the first round," and darts into the crowd. After a while, Derek's able to forget the jealousy. This is Styles with his friends, in his element, kicking everyone's ass at Donkey Kong and skee-ball, eating massive amounts of junk food, and actually having a good time. There's a persistent smile on his face, like he can forget about all his problems for a while. They play laser tag and air hockey. Allison beats the snot out of everyone at any game that requires aim. Scott has an asthma attack after a vigorous round of laser tag. It's what looks like a typical afternoon for Styles and his friends, and Derek is glad he was invited. In the end, he just hands over his tickets to Styles without the teenager even having to ask, because watching Styles pick out ridiculous prizes is far more fun than having them himself. Of course, this backfires immediately when Styles uses some of his tickets to get a pink stuffed rabbit and give it to Derek. He's snickering madly as he says, "'Cause I know you love fluffy animals so much. You should have it. I want you to have it." "Rabbits I will eat," Derek informs him. But he takes the stuffed toy, and he's clearly amused. Sorry, you savage, they don't serve rabbit on their pizza here, Styles says. He looks over to where Allison is blushingly accepting some charm necklace from Scott and gags. Jeez, you two, get a room. Shut up, Heather says, laughing. You did the exact same thing to me at your birthday last year. I still have that necklace. Styles turns pink and rubs a hand over his hair. That doesn't count. You won half the tickets. Derek does his level best not to twitch at that, and isn't sure how well he does. It isn't the act or the token itself that bothers him, because it's in the past, but the implication that he may have interrupted something between them. There's interest there, and it goes both ways. He can tell. He can smell it. It's not overt or strong enough to even compare to Scott and Allison, but it's there, and Derek would be lying if he said anything besides that he wanted Styles all for himself. He has no right to say or do anything because he can't stop humans from flirting. It's how they show appreciation for each other's attractiveness, since they can't rely on scent and hearing to tell them. A werewolf can't expect a human to be anything but a human, any more than a human can expect a werewolf to be anything besides a werewolf. But Styles doesn't even smell like Derek, not that Heather would be able to tell, which would have soothed a few of Derek's nerves. While Styles has gone to help his father collect massive amounts of pizza from the arcade's restaurant, Cora pulls Heather aside. In a voice that's low enough that humans won't be able to hear, although she clearly knows that Derek will be able to, she says, "So, did you and Styles have a thing?" "No," Heather says, laughing. "I guess I kind of had a crush on him, but, hey, all's fair in love and war. Derek got there first." Derek lets out a sigh of relief. He's even more positive than ever that he would be dead in a ditch without his little sister. "Thank you," he says, just loud enough for her wolf hearing to pick up, and his shoulders start to unknot. "'Cause we try not to steal people's boyfriends and stuff," Cora adds. "I mean, I thought maybe that was why Styles wasn't on the list?" "Nah, Styles had no clue I was into him. His obliviousness is adorable. And don't let him fool you. He's been staring at Derek's ass every time he thinks no one is looking." Derek's torn between continuing to listen, because it's nice to know that Styles finds him attractive, and running away. He's pretty sure that Cora is going to try to embarrass him soon, so he decides that going to help Styles and his father with the pizza is a safer bet. To his surprise, Styles looks immensely relieved to see him. "Hey, I'm glad you... Me and Heather, it's not a thing, you know?" Derek nods a little, but moves closer, feeling more welcome after having heard him say it. "She would have smelled different if you had been, but thanks for telling me," he adds, trying to keep the statement low-key. Sheriff Stalinsky glances over with one raised eyebrow, then gives a quiet smile and shakes his head, devoting his attention to the pizza. Styles shoves his hands down into his pockets and says, "Okay, I mean... Derek shifts his weight, trying to decide if he even wants an answer to his next question. He doesn't, but he feels like he owes it to Styles to ask. It's Styles' life they're talking about. "Was there going to be something? Did I take that away from you?" "Maybe someday," Styles says with a shrug. "Maybe we would have gotten married and had 5 kids. Maybe we would have had a torrid one-night stand and ruined our friendship. Life's full of maybes, you know? I don't..." His cheeks turn vaguely pink as he stares down at the tray of sodas he's gathering. "There are a lot of reasons I'm screwed up about this, but Heather isn't one of them." Derek wants to protest the idea of Styles being screwed up at all, but he's learning to keep a lid on it. Instead, he nods and holds out his hand through the tray of soda, obviously offering to help. The rabbit is tucked under one arm. "Okay." The relief that he had gotten all the way through his birthday party without any major disasters floated Styles through the weekend and to school the next day. After all the things he had imagined could and would go wrong, he's practically giddy with it. So he's completely unprepared when a voice comes on the intercom during their last period of the day. It's not the principal's voice or the secretary. It's loud and jovial,
so it's not Jackson, who doesn't know how to convey any emotion other than contempt, but it's almost certainly one of his lackeys. "Attention, ladies and gentlemen," the voice announces. "We have a very special birthday to celebrate today." "Oh my god," Styles says under his breath, feeling the blood rush to his face. He's going crimson all the way up to the tips of his ears. "Our own local celebrity, Styles Stilinski, turned 17 today," the voice continues, and suddenly every eye in the classroom is on him, including the teacher. Even Scott is staring at him, although he looks more stricken than anything else. "And so we have a very special song to play in his honor." Well, Styles thinks, that can't be too bad. They'll play "I'm Too Sexy" or something else ridiculous. Everyone will laugh at him, and he can move on with his life. Worse things have certainly happened to him in the past few months. But what comes on the intercom isn't a song at all. It's a recording that he instantly recognizes of his own voice, now about 2 weeks past. "Seriously, though, who gave Derek permission to be that freaking attractive?" he says over the intercom, just like he had said to Scott in the locker room the day after his tires had been slashed. His face goes from red to white as he remembers all the things that had come afterwards. Like, have you even seen his ass? And he wears these jeans that are practically obscene. Seriously, his thighs, I can't even. There's a spate of giggles through the class. Styles just sits there, struck speechless and motionless by what's going on. If a hole had opened to the underworld in front of his desk, he would have jumped into it without a second thought. "And so he lifts up my car like it's no big deal, and his frickin' biceps are like, oh, hi there, I exist to melt panties. And I couldn't stop looking at them, Jesus fucking Christ. And it's raining, okay, and he's wearing this V-neck shirt, and it's all clinging to him like, oomph, completely unfair. At least it wasn't white. I think I seriously would have had trouble keeping my dick in my pants if it had been white." "You should go for it," Scott says, his voice completely earnest on the recording. "Huh, yeah," Styles says. "Derek Hale totally wants a piece of me." The recording stops, and then the cheerful voice comes back on over the intercom. "So there you have it, folks. Styles Stilinski thinks that Derek Hale totally wants a piece of him. Happy birthday to Beacon Hills High's own whorewolf extraordinaire." The intercom clicks off after that, but it's by no means silent. Everyone is laughing. Scott is the sole exception. He looks like he'd be happy to commit harakiri right along with Styles. Even the teacher is laughing, leaning against the desk to keep from falling over. Styles quietly gathers his things. He knows that anything he says will only make things worse. He could scream, protest, argue, but it wouldn't do any good. His eyes burn with unshed tears that are as much rage as distress, but he refuses to let them fall. These assholes are not going to see him cry. All this time, the only way he's been able to fight back has been to refuse to fold. They can do whatever they want to him, but he won't run away. He won't cry. He won't back down. It's the only weapon he has to fight back with. He stands up, shoulders his backpack, and mouths, "I'm okay," to Scott, even though it's obvious that it couldn't be further from the truth. He doesn't want Scott coming after him. His own life won't be made any easier by this little stunt. Then he turns and walks, not runs, out of the classroom. He can hear laughter coming from almost every other room, hoots and hollers as he passes by the open doors. Once he gets outside, he's relieved to see that his car is intact, but less relieved to see that it's been decorated, festooned in streamers and flowers, whipped cream in the trails of cans that signified just married in the old days. He walks towards it a few steps, then veers off and starts into the woods instead. He doesn't even want to go near it. He heads into the preserve, not really thinking about where he's going, but just following the old animal paths instead. His chest is tight and aching, and he can't even think, he's so upset. He doesn't know how he'll ever be able to show his face in school again. The hatred is so strong that it's hard to breathe. His feet take him to the Hale house without even thinking about it, and he stares at it, almost amused by his subconscious's actions. Then again, what are his other options? He could go home and wallow in misery, or he could go to the station and let his father see him this upset, which would surely result in some awkward questions. There's a car parked next to the house, a well-worn family sedan, so he walks up to the door and rings the bell. From inside, he hears Laura call, "Just a minute!" But when the door swings open a few moments later, it's Peter who stands there. The werewolf doesn't look particularly surprised to see him, but then his eyes narrow and everything about him goes sharp and predatory. "Someone has upset you," he says. His voice is soft, calm, deadly in a way that defies explanation. Stiles may not be sure of Derek's feelings or intentions, but in that moment he's sure of one thing. If Peter knew who had upset him, that person would be dead. He's not exactly certain what that means in the grand scheme of things, but his research suggests only one possibility. Whether Talia likes it or not, the pack has accepted him. He licks his lips nervously and says, thinly, "I'm okay." Peter studies him a moment longer, then stands back and says, "Come inside." Stiles follows him in. Laura is just heading out of the kitchen to answer the door. She, at least, registers some surprise, and then she catches his scent, and her eyes flare gold for a brief moment. Unlike Peter, she suppresses the instinctual reaction to the smell of his distress. "Stiles, it's so good to see you," she says. "Cora's still at school, and everyone else is at work, but you're always welcome here." "Thanks," Stiles says. The tight knot in his throat is easing a little. He can breathe and swallow again. Peter steers him into the living room, where Tyler and Sylvia are playing. Stiles allows himself to be steered, and plunked down in their play area. Laura gets him a glass of cold lemonade, and that helps, too. Before long, he's building train tracks with the toddler, and he feels almost normal again. "Read me a story," Tyler says, climbing into his lap. "You too, Uncle Peter." Peter silently steps over the little toddler gate and sits down with them. His presence so close to Stiles is somewhat unnerving, but he's learned quickly that werewolves' definition of personal space is completely different from that of humans. Strangers have to be farther away, and packs should be closer. So when Peter's chest presses against his shoulder so he can reach over and run a hand over Tyler's hair, Stiles doesn't let it bother him. It's a little strange, awkward, but not bad awkward. By the time Cora gets home from school, he is calmed down enough that she doesn't immediately react to his scent. She's groaning about her homework and how much she hates math, so the two of them sit down together and start plugging away at it. He helps her with the math, and she offers a helpful tip or two on speed reading. It's nice sitting there with her doing something mundane while the baby naps, and Laura sits at the table with Tyler doing puzzles with him. Peter wanders in and out. Stiles hadn't realized, really, how used to being alone he was. Sure, he and Scott would do homework together sometimes, but lately he and Allison had been doing a lot of study sessions. Stiles can't really hold it against him, but his dad works a lot, and so more often than not, he sits around an empty house. At 5 o'clock, Laura says, "I'd better get dinner started. If you're done with your homework, Stiles, could you help me out?" "Sure," Stiles says, standing up. "What are you making?" "Spaghetti," Laura replies. "Again?" Cora whines. Laura ignores her, taking two boxes of spaghetti out of the pantry. Stiles opens the fridge and looks in the vegetable drawer. "Do you need to go to the store?" he asks. "What?" Laura asks, blinking at him. "Well, you don't have any onions or tomatoes," Stiles says. Laura puts two jars of Prego on the counter. "Spaghetti sauce," she says. "Oh," he replies. He tries to let it go. He really does. But the part of his brain that's incapable seizes on the subject of dinner. "But shouldn't you at least have some hamburger? I mean, I was doing research, and I read that werewolves require a higher protein and fat content in their diet than regular humans." "It's meat sauce," Laura says blankly. "Oh," Stiles says again. "Okay," he adds, because there isn't much else he can say to that.
Why don't you make the salad? Laura asks, and hands him a head of lettuce and a cutting board.
Stiles says okay, and he does find some cucumbers and some carrots in the bottom of the vegetable drawer. He can't help himself, though. He adds a little shredded cheese and some sunflower seeds that he finds in the pantry, because nobody is going to be malnourished while he's around. After half a decade of religiously watching his father's diet, it's almost reflex. Laura makes the spaghetti and then heats up the sauce in the microwave, and Stiles can't hold back a wince. And by the time everything is basically ready, her husband Jonathan is home, and Derek arrives a few minutes later. Aaron and Talia are nowhere to be seen. Stiles suspects that Laura texted them, telling them not to come home for dinner.
Stiles, Derek says, clearly surprised. He's a little bit dirty, a bit scruffier than normal after the day's labor.
Stiles' gaze darts to his biceps, and then the memory of what had happened at school that day comes out and brutally murders his libido.
Hi, he says. I just came over after school, because it seemed like a good idea.
You're always welcome here, Derek says, clearly a little puzzled. Stiles is glad that the smell of the food and the way all the other wolves have been clinging so close to him masks any other sense, emotional sense, he might be producing. Of course, from the reading he's been doing, the fact that the other wolves' scents are all over him is probably driving Derek nuts. He remembers what Derek had said to him that first day about how nobody else would want to get between them. He realizes abruptly that he's been thinking about this like it's real, like Derek is actually his mate, with real reason to be upset that people are scent-marking him. He rubs a hand over his face and goes back to setting the table.
Go clean up, Scruffy, Cora says to her brother. Dinner's almost ready.
Yeah, Derek says, and heads out of the room. Dinner that night is somewhat more loud and exciting than it had been the last time he was there. Stiles himself is quiet this time, choosing to observe rather than participate. Cora is chattering about some dance that her school is hosting the next weekend. Jonathan is complaining about a rude client. Laura is telling exaggerated stories about the trouble Tyler's gotten into while spooning food into the baby's mouth. Peter is quiet, too, and Derek mostly just watches Stiles surreptitiously with a faintly confused expression on his face. After dinner, Stiles helps Cora and Derek clean up in the kitchen. I should get home, he says, wanting to escape this time before any parental figures show up. But I don't have my car. For a minute, it looks like Derek might ask why not. Then he clearly thinks better of the idea and just says, I'll drive you then.
Thanks.
Stiles says goodbye to Cora, who hugs him, and he sees Derek's eyebrow twitch as yet another scent that's not his own is layered on top of Stiles. They head out to the car. Stiles takes a deep breath of the crisp evening air and stops with his hand on the door to the Camaro. He says, and his voice catches in his throat. He has a feeling that he's about to make a complete ass of himself, but the words escape his mouth before he can stop them.
You can scent mark me, if you want.
Derek fumbles his keys and nearly drops them, his gaze snapping up to Stiles to gauge his sincerity. I know it's probably driving you nuts the way I smell like Peter and the kids right now, Stiles continues, his voice a little rough. So, you know, if you want to, I don't mind. I want you to, his mental voice continues, and it's true. He doesn't know if Derek can smell that, but after everything that happened today, he's practically desperate for it. He doesn't dare say that part out loud. Derek opens his mouth to say something, but can't seem to come up with the right words, so he just stops. He pockets his keys and circles the car, slower than he'd like to, because he doesn't want to seem like he's pouncing. Once he's directly in front of Stiles, he does come up with the right words. Thank you. With a last look at Stiles' face, and a careful survey of everything he can pick up from Stiles to be sure he means it, Derek reaches out and first pulls Stiles into a simple but tight, warm hug. He makes sure to move slow enough to give Stiles a chance to change his mind. Stiles goes stiff in his embrace for a few minutes, his heart pounding, but then relaxes into it, pressing his cheek into Derek's shoulder. Derek waits for his heart to stop rabbiting against him, for his scent to return to normal. After that, he takes a moment to just enjoy the feeling of Styles' body, relaxed against his. Then, still moving slowly, he curls down, not very far at all, because Styles is nearly the same height, and nuzzles his nose into the crook of Styles' neck. The noise Derek makes is low, pleased, and entirely canine. This is the first time he's really been allowed to get Styles' scent unfiltered. The scent of a teenaged boy, medication, caffeine, the soap and shampoo he uses, the strange scents that make up the soul of Styles, like the smell of ink and paper and sarcasm and sharp intelligence. Things that shouldn't have a scent exactly, but every wolf will agree that they do. Underneath it all, Styles smells lonely, and Derek hates that. He pulls in Styles' scent in tiny little breaths and rubs his cheek against Styles, against his neck and his jaw and the side of his head. One of his hands comes up and rubs over Styles' hair in the back of his neck. Styles is very still for a moment, but then one hand clutches at the back of Derek's shirt, and he makes a noise in the back of his throat. It's not an unhappy noise exactly, and it certainly isn't a noise of protest. It's a broken little desperate noise of loneliness and longing. Derek suddenly wants to turn Styles right around and bring him back inside. He manages to get a hold of himself before he does, and instead just hugs him a little tighter, because he doesn't think he would get away with kidnapping Styles for the night. After a long moment, Styles clears his throat and starts to pull away. Derek lets him. He tries to think of something to say. What comes out is, "That was kind of intense." Derek nods a little. "Sometimes humans don't like it." He's not really worried about Styles being that way. He's pretty sure that Styles will actually take well to pack closeness. But it's true. Sometimes humans are bothered by it. It's one of the many reasons that werewolves established the list and the educational material that goes with it. Styles gives a little shiver. There's so much he could say that he can't even begin to say it. "Okay, well, I guess you should take me home now." With a nod, Derek opens the door for him. Taking care of him is an instinct that's hard to override at the moment. Styles gets into the car without protest, and his hands knot together as Derek rounds the car and gets into the driver's side, but then they relax. He's tired, but suddenly feels mellow. He's not sure what he's going to do about school the next day, besides suffer through, but he thinks he can handle it now. Derek drives home without saying anything, letting Styles have command of the radio and the silence. He surprises Derek by turning it to a classical station, and then just letting the music play, staring out the window. When he gets home, he's surprised to see his Jeep in the driveway, cleaned up, not a flower to be seen. His surprise is obvious, and Derek turns a sharp look on him. "I left it at school," he says. "Scott must have driven it home for me. He knows my locker combination, so he could have gotten my keys." Derek turns the car off and pulls the keys out of the ignition, fiddling with them. "Why did you do that?" There's a bare pause before Styles says, "I was upset. Driving seemed like a bad idea." It's the truth, if not the whole truth, and he hopes that it satisfies Derek and that he doesn't demand details. He knows that the werewolf has figured out at least some of what's happening at school. He's not an idiot. Calling him after his car had been vandalized had pretty much guaranteed that. It doesn't mean he wants to talk about it. It's obvious that Derek wants to ask why he's upset, but he lets it go, mostly because Styles seems content right now and he doesn't want to ruin it. Instead, he nods a little and then hands Styles a single key he's removed from his own set. "Here." Styles accepts the key, blinks at it, and says, "What?" "It's to the house." He shrugs like it isn't a big deal. To be fair, it isn't. Making someone part of the pack and part of the family is a big deal, but that's already been happening. That person being able to get into the den is just normal. "Oh." Styles swallows. He thinks he should probably argue, but he just doesn't have it in him. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Styles tucks the key away, clears his throat, and mumbles, Well, I'll see you later, I guess. And gets out of the car before he can do anything stupid. He calls Scott to thank him for taking care of the car. Scott says it was no problem. Allison helped out. They got into a whipped cream fight that ended in kissing. He has now officially kissed a girl. And by the way, is Styles okay? Styles says that he is. He's not sure how or why, but he is.